Welcome to yet another edition of Toonami Therapy, and today we are going to be going over the episodes that aired on April 15th and 16th, I think. That's the right dates, right?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay, I got that one right at least. Anyway, because JoJo's Bizarre Adventure both aired two episodes, and it's the ending of this season, of this arc of basically the end of the current plot, or the ending of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 2. The point is, we're going to be discussing it a lot, so we're going to wait until the end to discuss it.
Yeah.
All right. So, in the mean, otherwise, though, we will continue with our usual method of doing them in order, or at least doing them in order after you correct me after I goof it up at some point. So, we'll begin with Samurai Jack as a result. All right, so, at the beginning of this episode, we have a big army that tries to go and take out Aku, but then he just completely owns them. The leader is this sort of Scotsman guy who was a recurring character in the series before. In fact, I think he was the only recurring character besides Jack and Aku. And it was, honestly, it was, this sequence I thought was pretty funny, mostly because of him. Just some of the stuff he says. Anyway, but because they lose, he kind of tells them to just get out of there, and he stalls Aku by insulting him. And apparently hits home a bit because Aku actually does vaporize him, but then he comes back as a ghost because of, and he literally says, Celtic magic, which honestly did make me laugh. Anyway, so he says, you know, we'll get a bigger army and let's see if we can find Jack, which makes you wonder, well, why didn't you just try to get him in the first place? But whatever, it was at least funny despite the fact, it was at least funny, and we saw a little more of Aku, which was nice. Anyway, the other main plot is, of course, Jack and, Ashi, that was it. So he manages to convince her, oh yeah, Aku is totally evil, and they end up going to try to rescue these sort of, kids. I don't know exactly what their species is supposed to be, but whatever. Anyway, long story short, and I'm actually not going to make it that short now that I think about how I'm going to say it. But, so Ashi manages to defeat the sort of guardian guy and turn off the thing that is controlling the kids because they've got these implants in them that have turned them evil and they're attacking Jack. However, Jack doesn't know that's what happened, so he thinks he's killed all of them. And then some guy shows up and then Jack just goes off with him. And that was very confusing, to be honest. So then Ashi tries to find him and he's not there, and then the episode ends.
Yeah, I don't really have anything to add.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. Not great. It was mostly just seeing the Scotsman guy around because I remember liking him in the original series. He was pretty funny. But yeah, other than that, the stuff that I described happened. All right, moving on to Dragon Ball Super, episode 14. So, I guess this is another one where I'll just explain what happened because it was fairly straightforward. So, Goku is fighting Beerus, but Beerus gains the upper hand and Goku pretty much concedes defeat. So then Beerus, like, sort of flicks him off, and I mean, as in, you know, he does that thing before where he... There's got to be a name for it. That thing where in order to demonstrate how strong you are, you just sort of put your index finger sort of in front of someone's face and then flick them to send them flying. There's got to be a word for that. But in any case, so then Goku starts falling to Earth, but then he decides, no, I'm not done. So he gets back and he fights, and Beerus's expression actually is pretty funny in response to that. And they fight, and then Goku loses again and just falls to Earth. Meaning that after a bunch of fighting, we were in exactly the same space as we were before. No padding, is there anything you can't do? So, they go back to the others, and Beerus announces that he's going to destroy Earth. But then he falls asleep, and because he's apparently tired out by the whole thing. So Whis takes Beerus back and, you know, explains that. And then it's kind of left a little unclear as to whether Beerus was actually fell asleep or whether he was just faking it in order to, you know, not have to, in order to look tough without destroying the Earth. I'm going to be honest, I liked it more in the movie because what happens there is they sort of land on the ground and he announces, I'm going to destroy the Earth. And then he just kind of blasts this random rock and destroys it. Says, there, I destroyed the Earth, just a small part of it, which I thought was better. But in any case, so that's the resolution of the fight and there's some kind of goofy epilogue stuff. And then that's it for the episode and the arc.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed by it. I just thought it felt like a big waste of time if Goku wasn't going to win. And Beerus just, in the end, just says, oh, I don't feel like it. So, yeah, I felt like it was a waste.
Yeah, like I said, when I watched the movie, I thought it was pretty decent. Not perfect. There were some issues I had with it. But for the most part, I enjoyed it. This just takes that and just pads it out so much to the point that the endings like that, which could have been funny and I think was kind of funny in the movie, after going through all that and just getting to that, it doesn't work as well. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it I don't know. It's not like it was bad. It's just I was hoping for something better, that's all.
Yes, I like I said, a bunch of people I've seen say, well, the series gets a lot better after you get through the adaptations of the films. But unfortunately, we've still got one more of those to go, which I think is about 12 episodes. So it's going to be a little while before we get to that point, unfortunately.
That's great.
All right. So next up is Dragon Ball Z Kai, episode 113. And in this episode, well, first Gohan gets the Senzu beans to Videl, and there's of course some comical stuff where Mr. Saiyan is trying to stop him, but you know actually totally cures her because that's what Senzu beans do. And then there's sort of some exposition where the rest of the characters find out that Shin is the Supreme Kai. Did they find that out in the previous episode? No, Piccolo tells them, which means he's a really big deal, but at least for the purpose of this arc. Afterwards, of course, you know, because more powerful guys need to get introduced, we, you know, have Beerus and such show up. But for now, he's a big deal. Anyway, so he says that he basically explains that so his assistant guy, whose name I can't remember offhand, is going up against Gohan, and he tells Gohan, hey, you should go Super Saiyan, and he does. But then Spopovich and the other guy, I only remember Spopovich's name because they kept saying it, but yeah. This other guy that was with him, just run over there, and then they suck a bunch of energy out of Gohan using this machine thing and then fly off. And apparently it was a point because they were trying to find those guys and now they're going to follow them after they run off. And yep. I'm trying to go through these a bit quickly so we can get to our probably long JoJo discussion. But in fairness, this was pretty easy to get through.
Yeah, my big problem with this is just that they basically say that Supreme Kai character says that they can't stop them from just going ahead and doing that to Gohan, and everyone else just like they're fine with it. I didn't understand that at all. Could you explain it?
Well, to be honest, it probably would have made a little more sense if he had simply explained the situation, you know, to say, oh, we're doing this to lure these guys out so we can follow them. But instead, he's just kind of cryptic about it. I guess, like, the point is supposed to be he's considered such a big deal that they'd, you know, listen to him as a result of that. But still, that's the problem when a character... There's often times where a character doesn't reveal something in order so that the audience doesn't hear it. And, you know, that can be a bit annoying sometimes. But especially in cases like this, where there's not really much of a reason to not explain it.
Right, yeah.
Maybe they could have even, you know, if he explained it and then it cut away and then it cut back. And that would have still felt like a little bit of a cheat, but at least would have better explained why they were like, okay, let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't like the whole thing where they say, oh, we can't beat them, so let's just not even try. That just doesn't seem to make too much sense to me. I'd rather see them actually go out and battle, even if they get defeated, because at least in that case, I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me.
Defeat, you mean the guys who took Gohan's energy? Or...
Yeah, those guys.
Did they say that he... Well, I don't think he was saying... Did he say they weren't powerful enough? I thought he was trying to say that they should let them do it. Because that was part of the point. Because then they'd be able to follow them after they leave. Although I don't think he explained that much. I don't think they explained that much of it in this episode. I just remember that was a plan from seeing this before.
Oh, okay. Well, I haven't seen it before, so I don't exactly understand what's going on with that whole thing.
Fair. Would have been, like I said, it could have been, if he had explained it a little better, I suppose, just saying, we need to try to follow them. And such, because I don't think he did that. Just, you know, mentioning that would explain it better to them and also tell the audience a little better. Mm-hmm. All right. So after that is JoJo, which again, we're waiting till the end on. And next, so as a result, next up, we're going to Hunter Hunter episode 47.
Already. Okay. So this is the big battle between Kurapika and Uvogin, and they go out to this pretty much the same place they were at before to have their battle, and Kurapika holds out the chain to kind of confuse Uvogin, and in reality he's made his chain invisible and he's able to jump around and chain him all over. And then he's got Uvogin pretty much locked up in the chain. And he then tries to extract information from Uvogin, but Uvogin won't comply with him. And thus, once Kurapika makes he has this one ability where if the person does not abide by what he's commanded to do, then he'll instantly die. So Uvogin refuses to tell him anything about the Phantom Troop, and thus he instantly dies. And
you know, that was something that was a little weird, because I thought Kurapika said, unless you tell the truth, it will instantly kill you. But then he asked a question, and Uvogin refuses to answer. Well, he's not actually lying, is he? So why does it go off then? I'm overanalyzing things again.
Yeah, but so basically he dies, and Kurapika buries him, and now, that's pretty much all for this episode. It was a great battle. I don't really do a good job of explaining it. I'm never good at explaining battles, but I really enjoyed this episode.
Oh, I think you're better than explaining battles than I am a lot of the time. considering how many times for JoJo I've tried to explain it and I kind of come up short, and then you explain it way better than me.
Well, this was a fun battle, and there's a lot more fun stuff to come, but this was definitely one of the highlights of the arc.
Yeah, it was good. I did have one sort of issue with it, though, and that's the fact that when I step back and look at the battle, it's actually not really that much of a battle because it's so one-sided. Kurapika is, when he's facing up against a member of the Phantom Troop, he's pretty much broken because this was the episode that did fully explain if you set a contract on your ability, some restriction on it, that will make it much more powerful. But, you know, if you break the contract, you could lose that ability or outright die. So he, right, for the chain, makes it so that he can only use it on the Phantom Troop, which, of course, is very, very, very narrow because there's how many of them again? Like 12, 13, 4, something like that. So obviously that makes it incredibly powerful, but it also makes it like really one-sided because essentially Kurapika just completely owns Ubigen. It's not really that much of a fight, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're right about that. And I wanted to mention that because it's like, it is very one-sided, but you have to remember that Ubigen was already established to be super powerful. You know, he completely destroyed those guys. I mean, he took a bazooka to the face and survived. So we already have it established that Ubigen is really strong, and just that Kurapika has, by making this contract, and it's like, who did he make the contract with? But he made the contract, and as a result, he is pretty much unstoppable against the Phantom Troop. Now all he has to do is find them, and that's the trick, isn't it?
Well, in terms of who you make the contract, I thought the contract was essentially with yourself. You just sort of did that, and then, as it was mentioned, if you then break the contract, really bad things will happen to you.
That's true. Yeah, I guess so. It's just a little confusing. They keep on saying, you know, he made a contract, but it's like where did he sign on for it?
Yeah. What exactly is? What if you need mediation on these things? Who do you go to? Yeah, it might have made more sense if it was called a vow or a promise when you get down to it. But essentially, the idea is you set a limitation on your style of attack, and then if you break it, well, like I said, bad stuff will happen. You could possibly die. But the more harsh the restriction, the more powerful your attack is. Mm-hmm. Although this does make me, of course, wonder, because I always overanalyze these things. So how about just making a separate attack, a zillion attacks for all sorts of like really specific things? Like, okay, like how about making an attack what if you were to go through every single name that exists? I guess some people might have really weird names. But what if you're just like, okay, this will be an attack I will use against people whose names start with A. This is one against people whose names start with B, C, D, and so on. And then you would just use it against whatever was the correct one to use. Although I suppose in that case you might, unfortunately, find out someone's name falsely, and then you decide, okay, so this guy's name is Chip, I'll use the C, but then it turns out his name was actually Bob.
Yeah. I thought of something funny, but I forgot it now. So yeah, that's I guess it could work like that, but yeah, I don't have anything else to say.
Yeah, maybe it would have made it might have Maybe, like, you can only have so many contracts, but, or something. I don't know. It's just me, as always, overanalyzing things. Okay. So, after that, we have Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn, episode 15, in which some stuff happened, but I'm not really, but I'm kind of confused about most of it. They fought, and Full Frontal was around, and there was some talking at the end by some guys. Yeah, and I really can't remember much other than that.
Minerva was doing some talking too, and basically the whole thing with Banadre, we gotta find LaPlaza's box and all that. But again, we still don't know why finding LaPlaza's box is going to end the war or stop a war. And it feels almost like a self-fulfilling prophecy at this point, because LaPlaza's box is supposed to stop a war, but in order to get LaPlaza's box, they're basically having warfare, so they're having a war to stop a war. That's what it feels like to me.
What if that's a twist ending? That LaPlaza's box, it turns out you ended up, because to get it, you had to win a war. In doing so, you stopped a war.
Well, that would actually be good. But now that I figured it out, it wouldn't be as good as I had hoped.
I don't know.
I'll have to spoil myself now just to find out if that was it. because now I'll feel really stupid, like, oh, I figured it out now. Self-fulfilling prophecies happen way too often in these things.
That would be interesting, but at the same time, it would also feel kind of weird, because usually when you get those kind of prophecies, it comes from some sort of mystical force, so it can justify how you know it. Here, it's just basically the person who set it up is thinking, well, this would probably result in a war being won. It might be a little awkward if people in the middle of fighting found it and then discovered, and then they open it up and it says, you have, by finding this, you have ended the war.
Speaking of self-fulfilling prophecies, there's going to be one of those coming up in Hunter x Hunter. So, yeah. Well, and I'm meaning a literal prophecy in that case. It's actually pretty interesting how it turns out, but I won't spoil anything more than that.
Okay. Well, I can't even remember. How far ahead is this? Is this, like, near, or is it...
Very near. Very
okay.
Near.
Okay, that must have been something that I forgot about this arc, then. All right, that'll be interesting. Oh, wait. Oh, yeah. Oh, no, I don't know the prophecy, but I know where it came from. But, yeah, I can't remember a lot of the specifics, but yes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So that was us talking about this and not really saying much about the episode, because unfortunately, yeah, I'll admit I was kind of tired when I watched it and was just sort of, so I already wasn't really understanding everything, but really most of this just felt like it was just a fight, and that those are always the most confusing episodes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't really have anything else to add. Yeah.
Okay, so then we're up to episode 154 of Naruto. So basically, Naruto is able to deduce that what they thought was a 9 was actually the katakana symbol for ta, and it looked like a 9 because that's the way Jiraiya wrote it. Anyway, so they basically figure out, oh, this is saying that it's from that Makeout Tactics book, because ta, tactics, they do use that to spell it out in Japanese. I think now I lost my train of thought. But basically, It was... One sec. Yeah, Tactics. Except it's in Japanese, so a lot of times when they try to write an English word in Japanese, it sounds... ends up being kind, just kind of like it, because it's written Takutikusu. That's how you get Tactics in Japanese. Takutikusu. Yeah. That's how... That's because it's ta, but... Anyway, so they figure that out, and it turns out that it's the first word from that the numbers then are the pages of the book, and it's the first symbol from each of those. Now, first off, props to Jiraiya for not only memorizing his book, but also on exactly what pages each symbol is. I mean, like, wow. Does he like have the whole thing memorized, or did he just memorize all the first symbols of each page just in case? I don't know. That part did feel a little contrived to me.
Yeah, I agree.
But in any case, they discover that it means the real ones not among them, which means that I think the real pain wasn't one of the pains he fought. So then Naruto goes off with the frog guy to do training, and it kind of ends with that, with them going to start doing training in order to learn. I can't remember what it's called, but it's a big deal, I think.
Yeah, it's the typical training arc again for Naruto, which. Who knows how long they'll be back into doing the training again. And maybe we'll get to hear the Froggy song again.
Maybe. There was one kind of funny part, though, where Kakashi opens the book. And then someone's like, well, okay, read the page. And he's just kind of looking at it nervously. He's like, well, what are you waiting for? Read it. And he just says, I love you? Because that's apparently how it... starts, and then everyone looks really weird afterwards. If I remember correctly, the book is supposed to be some sort of adult romance book, so maybe there was a bunch of explicit stuff he was having to read. But anyway, that, at least that's the implication. So yes, that was Naruto. And then the night, but not this podcast, closed with Ghost in the Shell. And it was episode, 11. Now, you said that you weren't able to watch this. You kind of forgot.
Yeah.
Okay.
I forgot. I just totally forgot about Ghost in the Shell altogether. So, yeah.
Okay.
I guess that's how much I've been intrigued by it, that I forgot that it was even on.
Okay. Well, this episode, this one thing I wanted to mention was, as I think I've said before, when it displays the episode title, it'll either say standalone episode or complex episodes to indicate which ones are just, well, standalone and which ones are more for part of the sort of overarching plot about the Laughing Man. And I didn't happen to see that when I was watching this. So I thought, okay, this seems like a standalone one. But then midway through, it turns out that it does involve the Laughing Man case. And it just made me think, well, maybe they shouldn't be putting that right at the episode title, because that just gives away what it is. Because it would actually kind of been a good twist, as it was for me, to go through there and... And then, now I lost my track. Oh, yeah. And not know that and have it be more of a twist. But anyway, so there's a hack of some government place, and it comes back to this facility that helps people with cyber brain closed shell syndrome, which was a little confusing, but the way I got it is that it's what if, because a lot of people have these sort of, computers attached to their brains, maybe when if something goes wrong, that's what happens. It sort of mess up your mind a bit. So Togusa ends up having to go undercover to investigate it, and he discovers there's some sort of weird stuff going on there, but we don't really find out that much. We do know that one of the guys there was called by the other kids. It's mostly a bunch of kids there as chief. But he's able to get away and erase everyone's memory of him. So Togusai at the end, he's trying to draw a picture of that, but then it ends up just being a picture of the Laughing Man symbol, and he apparently didn't even realize he did it, which meant that his memory got altered also. So it was okay. I did think it was interesting the way it seems to just be a regular sort of case and then transitioning to Laughing Man, but at the same time, it didn't feel like it really added anything to it. It's just a case of, okay, the Laughing Man was involved and now he's gone. It just didn't feel like it furthered that plot in any way.
Mm-hmm. But, yeah, well, I didn't see it, okay. So I don't have anything to add.
But it was at least decently enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Okay, now time for the main event of the night. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, Part 2, Episode 25 and 26. Well, actually, it's episodes... The episodes of Part 2 is different because it's 25 and 26 of the first season, which comprised of Part 1 and Part 2. The point is, Episode 25 and 26 of Season 1. Okay. So, this, of course, is a big conclusion. Now, last time, Cars was able to, set it up so that when he got hit by all those light, it actually made him stronger. And he becomes, like, the most amazing... I can't remember exactly what they call it. Was it the ultimate life form? I feel like it was something slightly different than that. But maybe that was it. And so he's able to actually turn parts of his body into animals. So his hand turns into a squirrel. And then the squirrel starts attacking people. Which leads to what is... one of the best lines I've heard, when I think it was Von Stroheim who says, he says, "Squirrel incoming!" I just love that line so much. Reminded me of Monty Python and the Holy Grail with the hare, the rabbit. Anyway, so they try to, of course, fight him, but nothing is able to hurt him because he's basically become impervious, it seems. So JoJo decides and he just talks about how he's got some last, ditch plan. And Smokey's like, "Oh, wait, it's not that again, isn't it?" JoJo goes, "Yep, run away!" And then he just runs off. Anyway, so he ends up managing to get into a plane and fly off. Which Cars then starts pursuing him because he can, he's able to give himself wings. So JoJo's able to communicate with the others, although via the radio, but he does end up getting sort of cut off. And I will say, this is possibly the first time I've ever seen on television a character say, "What did you say? You're breaking up." And the radio was actually breaking up. They weren't just faking it to try to get out of a call. So JoJo ends up, through a bunch of convoluted maneuvering, manages to hit Cars with the plane and is going to try to make it sink into a volcano where there's the lava. Or is it the... it's lava when it's outside of the volcano, right? So that when it's on the surface. So is that lava or is it still magma? Is it when it's outside of the volcano's base or is it when it's not in the ground anymore? Man, I took 2 years of earth science and I can't remember this. But anyway, to do that. And it seems like Cars is going to be able to get out of it, but then Von Stroheim shows up and is able to thwart him, and he saves JoJo. So the plane manages to bash him right into the lava, / magma, or whichever it is. Well, the Wikipedia article description uses magma, and Wikipedia is always reliable, don't you know? And that's where the first episode ends. Do you want to go? Do you want to discuss the first episode or move on to the second and discuss them as a whole?
We'll just combine them.
Okay. But then it turns out that Cars is able to get out of there. Initially, it seems like the hot stuff is too powerful even for his armor, but he's able to make air bubbles to protect himself. I have no idea if that actually works scientifically. There's a lot of things in this episode that left me wondering. I'm not sure if that's scientifically possible, but let's not get into that quite yet. Honestly, if I tried to analyze scientifically everything in these shows, then I'd probably be a much more cynical person than I actually am. So, he's able to get out, and he actually managed to slice off JoJo's hand, which it was actually pretty pretty shocking. And so, he unfortunately is... So again, he's there, and they really just don't know how to fight him. But ultimately, Joe is able, when Cars is going after him, to use the Asia Stone to protect himself and make it so that Cars' hormone energy, because Cars can do hormone now, into the volcano, which then sends them shooting up straight into the sky on the rock thing they're on. And then JoJo's able to manage to distract Cars briefly in order to knock him further out into the Earth's atmosphere. And there's a really great part where Cars is saying, "Did you plan all this?" JoJo says, "Do you even have to ask that question?" And Cars seems all annoyed. And JoJo just thinks, "Actually, I just got lucky, but it'll drive Cars nuts thinking I planned it out." So Cars ends up in space. Now here's where we get to science stuff, because I'm not sure he could have been going fast enough to actually escape Earth's gravity. I could see him easily being a satellite floating around Earth, but not into outer space. But I don't know. It's hormone. It can do whatever. Mm-hmm. So he decides, I'm just going to get back, but he's not able to because it's space, and he only ends up freezing himself all over and being unable to move, and then he just kind of floats off into space, and the narrator just tells us that he just floated away forever and couldn't move, and even though he wanted to die, he couldn't because the whole thing made him immortal, and eventually just stopped thinking. And you were worried that they were going to redeem Cars. Okay, so there's that, but then everyone thinks JoJo died, but it turns out he actually didn't, and it actually is kind of funny that he just shows up at the funeral and is just confused about what's going on. So it turns out that he managed to survive it because the rock fell onto the water. I'm not sure water is enough to blunt the sheer speed you would have been falling back down to Earth on, but whatever, Hamon did it. Mm-hmm. So he was nursed back by Susie Q, and they fell in love, and they got married, and yeah. And then it sort of does sort of a quick epilogue about what happened to the characters, you know, the older characters like Erina, you know, grew old and died at the age of 81. Speedwagon then died. I mean, you know, this is just, you know, time goes on. It's not sort of like, it's not like really a depressing thing. Let's see. And so then Von Stroheim, it turns out, died in the Battle of Stalingrad. And it just leaves you to question, okay, how did the Germans lose if they had this kind of crazy technology? You, like, literally see a bunch of guns come out of his back. I don't know. I'm just going to go with the theory that this is an alternate timeline where the Nazis, you know, were not great people, but, you know, they weren't, like, as bad. Like, say, maybe they didn't go off on actual Holocaust or whatever, which could make, you know, you like Von Stroheim a little more. I mean, if you ignore him killing a bunch of people at the start, but, you know, maybe became nicer after he was rebuilt. And that explains why Germany could have this kind of crazy technology and still not win World War II. But anyway, so it kind of goes on with that sort of stuff, and it mentions Smokey becoming the first black mayor of his city. You know, that guy, why was that character around? He didn't do anything.
Yeah.
He was just, he was just kind of around. I mean, that's kind of the problem I had with Speedwagon in part one, but he was able to do a bit more in this part to better sort of justify him being around. But maybe I'll discuss that a little later. So it ends with all the way later in 1987, where you see this much older Joseph who's coming to Japan visit his daughter, and it turns out he's actually really annoyed with Japanese people because he meets this guy and just says, "Hey, you're Japanese, aren't you?" And he just kicks him in the knee because he's really, like I said, annoyed with them because his daughter married some Japanese guy and moved away to Japan. And then we also discover that, surprise, Dio's back because part of the ship he was in got, fished out of the water, which is the setup for part three. And that's the end of this episode, this part of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure.
Okay, so, I wasn't as big of a fan of it as you were, especially not the whole thing where he sews up his own funeral, because it was so obvious that was going to happen. That was almost as obvious as some of the supposed plot twist of Star Wars: The Force Awakens, which was entirely too predictable. This was also pretty predictable to me, and so I really, I don't know. I really didn't enjoy these episodes all that much. They weren't bad, but it just seemed a little too predictable to me. And I guess with Dio coming back, that's disappointing to me too, because I don't know. I just don't like whenever these villains hang around for too long, and if he's back, then he's obviously hanging around way too long. So
well, he was only around for 9 episodes so far.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't see where everyone says JoJo is such this amazing series. I really don't see it. To me, it seems just very average at best. And I don't know. I guess it's going to have to try to redeem itself in part three, because I'm just not into it.
Hmm. Okay. I think a lot of people seem to consider parts three or four as some of their favorites in the series. So what I've heard mostly about part, I don't think I've seen many people cite that as their favorite. It's just everyone says it's a big improvement over part one, which I will definitely agree with.
Mm-hmm.
I think you probably like part two more than part one.
To be honest, I don't really see much of a difference between the two parts. Hmm. They were both kind of average, maybe a little above average, but neither were great. So, yeah, I don't know.
Well, we'll see. We don't know if we'll be getting JoJo again. Apparently, one of the guys who's sort of in charge of Toonami was asked about it, and he said he hoped they would be able to have more. So that's an indication that maybe, but, you know, maybe not. We are going to have Attack on Titan premiere next week, and it apparently is, this season is only 12 episodes, so it's quite possible they'll just air that, and then they'll bring back JoJo Part 3.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, so Attack on Titan begins next week?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. That there's another series where I don't see it being as good as everyone says it is. I guess we'll just have to wait and see if this part of Attack on Titan can be any better than the first part. Now, if you compared to me Attack on Titan and JoJo, I'd definitely go with JoJo every day of the week, because JoJo is at least, you know, average. Attack on Titan, I thought, was just totally overrated. So we'll have to see if this part of Attack on Titan is going to be as good as everyone says it is. For JoJo, I hope it comes back and I can get to see the next part of it. I actually have DVDs of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure I found. It was like a few episodes, but I'm not sure which part they are. They say one and two on them, but they definitely aren't from the first part or second part. The character who's in them is named Jotaro Kujo, so I'm not sure which one that is.
I think that's part three. Let me check on that quick. Yes, that is part three.
Oh, okay. I might have to watch them then.
I'm not sure how much of it they necessarily dubbed. I know they started on it, but I think I said before, I don't know how far they got into it. If they're going to air it on Toonami, obviously they'd be finishing it, or maybe they have finished it, or they're in the process of. I don't know. I guess we'll find out when Attack on Titan is over, because before that, there will be the end of Samurai Jack and also Gundam Unicorn. But I think Unicorn is probably going to be replaced by Season 2 of Iron-Blooded Orphans, and I wouldn't be surprised if nothing really replaces Samurai Jack, because it just kind of, there wasn't anything on Toonami at that point before that. It was just, I don't know, I think it was probably some Family Guy rerun that it replaced.
Yeah.
So they might not put anything there after that. They might just go back to reruns of some random Adult Swim show. But we'll see. We're going to find out, I think, in about a few months about that. Mm-hmm. I personally do hope we see more of JoJo. I really did enjoy it. There were some issues I had with it, but on the whole, I did like Part 2 a lot more than Part 1. I liked the fact Speedwagon had done a little more, because he was just kind of there in Part 1. And here he didn't have a big part, but he was more relevant. I do sort of wonder though if a lot of the stuff that Von Stroheim did could have maybe been given to him. Like maybe he could have, you know, been injured and sort of repaired himself, you know, to be sort of a cyborg instead, because, and then he could have helped JoJo, which would have given him more of a part, and also, you know, it would have been definitely a good guy there, instead of having the sort of weird thing where Von Stroheim just suddenly becomes a good guy.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that.
Okay. So, yeah, I'm trying to think if there's anything else I really wanted to say about JoJo's Bizarre Adventure Part 2 in general. I guess we can just go over some of the characters quick. Now, you said you thought Part 1 and Part 2 were of about the same quality. Do you think about the main characters? Do you like Joseph more than Jonathan, or do you think...
No, I like Jonathan a lot better than Joseph, and that's the reason why I don't see much of a difference between the two, because even though part two might have been better overall, part one had a better hero, so I enjoyed Jonathan a lot more. I don't know. Joseph just came off as off-putting in a lot of ways to me. And
you're having almost the exact opposite reaction of I usually seen. Most people didn't really like Jonathan and thought Joseph was a big improvement. Mm-hmm. I personally, I mean, I like Jonathan. I do think I like Joseph more. I think he had a bit more personality. But yeah, I was okay with both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I just, Joseph just came off to me as too arrogant and too much of a womanizer, too. I didn't really like that part about him either. And the whole thing where he ends up with Susie Q, I think, was pretty stupid because, you know, it just seems like he just gets the woman just because, I don't know. It just didn't make much sense to me, so...
I still did think that scene was pretty funny where he's confused as to why everyone thinks he's dead and is just saying, Susie, you did remember to send the telegram, right? And it just goes, I didn't send it. It just runs off. I thought that was kind of funny. Yeah. But yeah, okay. So you thought it was kind of average, but still decent. I didn't think it was amazing. It's definitely one of my favorite anime, but it definitely, I did enjoy it quite a bit, and I'm going to miss it. I really hope it does come back once Attack on Titan is done. It seems like so many things that I like are kind of leaving. We're replacing JoJo with Attack on Titan. Hunter x Hunter will eventually be getting out of the York New City arc. I don't remember disliking Greed Island as much as I think you did, but it was a while ago I read it. So
just in comparison, it's not like it's not bad, but whenever you look in comparison to what's had been on, you're going to be disappointed. So. Yeah, that's all I can say about it.
Yeah, I guess we'll see when we get there. But mm-hmm. I think that we said everything we have to say about JoJo and really, I guess, Toonami in general, outside of picking what our favorite ones for the night are. And I'm sorry, I have to go with JoJo again. Have I, like, picked JoJo every episode so far? I feel like I have we've been doing... this. Okay, that is one. In that case, I am kind of glad we're at least on a bit of a break so that I can pick different shows.
Yeah, well, I've only picked JoJo once, and that was last week. So I'm definitely going with Hunter x Hunter. This is one of the best episodes of Hunter x Hunter, and JoJo with that extremely predictable sewing up at his own funeral thing. I can't go with it. So definitely going to Hunter x Hunter.
Yes. Although with JoJo leaving, that might just shift the problem because in all these times I picked JoJo, I think Hunter x Hunter was my runner up for pretty much all of them. So is it just going to be nothing but a string of Hunter x Hunters after this?
Maybe.
For
the rest of this arc, probably. Yeah, for the rest of the York New City arc, it's going to be all Hunter x Hunter. And then once it gets to Greed Island, then who knows what you're going to be picking.
Please, Attack on Titan, be a really good season so I have more competition. Not only that, I'd rather you be a good season because then I can enjoy you more. All right. Well, I suppose that is that for that. I just love saying that often. That is that for that. I don't know where I was going with that. Anyway, so this has been another episode of Toonami Therapy. You can catch up on our previous ones at either toonamitherapy.podbean.com or at Tommy's blog, which is tommyaphillips.com, which also includes a number of his reviews of various other animes. Yep, that's pretty much it. And unfortunately, I think I had a great witty way to end this, but then I totally forgot what it was. So, do you have anything else to say?
No, I don't have anything else. I think you've covered it all.
Okay, so I guess this is how we're going to be concluding it, because I did still like that line. Squirrel incoming!